Morning, ladies and gentlemen. We have six cases on our calendar this morning. A case from the Court of Federal Claims concerning procurement. Two patent cases, one from district court, the other from the PTO. Three government employee cases, two of which are being submitted on the briefs and will therefore not be argued. First case is Angelica Textile Services versus the United States, 2011-50-36.
Mr. Fuller. Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to apologize in advance to the court if you have trouble understanding me. I had a bad cold last week and it has since departed, but it unfortunately took with it a good bit of my voice. So if the court has trouble understanding me or if I'm not further problems, please let me know and I'll be happy to repeat what I said or try to speak more clearly.
Fine. Maybe talking will help your voice.
I hope so, Your Honor. Your Honor, there are two questions before the court in this matter. First issue is whether or not the plaintiff appellee in this matter, Angelica Textile Services, had standing to pursue the to argue about the violation of law or regulation that concerned it. Second is whether the Court of Federal Claims had jurisdiction to award the relief to Angelica that it did. And I'll start with the issue of standing. In order to establish standing in a bid protest, a party must establish that it is, I'll quote, an actual or prospective bidder and possesses the requisite economic interest.
Well, Angelica did have a contract, didn't they?
They did, Your Honor.
And they did have an interim contract, so they didn't just come in from the cold out of nowhere.
Absolutely, Your Honor. The issue is, the other part of this is, in order to establish prejudice, a protester must show that there was a substantial chance that it would have received the contract award but for the alleged error that it's complaining of. The error that Angelica is complaining about is the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Before you get to that, so let me, maybe you can direct your comments then to this. I've got a concern about standing. I'm a little perplexed because Angelica is not a veteran-known business and it's not on this procurement list. So I have a hard time seeing, with respect to the award that's at issue here, they weren't eligible for the award under any circumstances, irrespective of whether or not there was a violation here or not. Am I wrong about that?
You are not wrong at all, Your Honor. You're absolutely correct.
So where does the direct economic injury come from if they were not eligible for competing for the award that is the subject of litigation?
Your Honor, the court below found that the direct economic interest came from the ability to compete for a follow-on contract to the large, longer-term contract Angelica had been performing. This is a completely improper ruling. This is a completely incorrect ruling. There's never been any debate about Angelica's ability or eligibility.
You're agreeing with the Court of Claims ruling. The Court of Claims said you have standing to pursue it.
Right, Your Honor. And I'm sorry, I'm disagreeing very much with the Court of Federal Claims.
Okay.
Court of Federal Claims said that they had standing to do it because of this short-term contract. That is absolutely not the case. The Angelica standing for such a contract was never at issue at all. Even if the Department of Veterans Affairs had followed the internal guidelines, Angelica could not have received a contract award. If the department had followed the guidelines, the contract could have gone to a veteran-owned business of some sort. Had it not followed the guidelines, they could have gone to an issue. I agree with you, Your Honor. I do not understand how the court found standing here. So, the court found it based on follow-on contract. That has never been an issue.
Well, there's some interest there. I mean, they had something to gain or lose, right, on the extension, how long a period of time between the actual award was extended, right?
Yes, Your Honor, there was an interest in them holding on to this contract, but that does not establish standing for the long-term follow-on contract. Angelica's standing for the interim contract was never issued. It occurred before there was any set-aside decision made, and therefore there was nothing that prohibited their eligibility.
Now,
however,
folks, who is this committee? Are they part of some agency? Are they part of the executive branch?
Your Honor, they're an independent federal agency. The Committee for Purchase for People Who Are Blind or Slow.
Like the ITC or the SEC?
They're an independent executive agency. This is their purpose. They administer the Javits-Wagner O'Day Act. Actually, we'll give a little sort of overview. You have the committee, which is a federal agency. They administer what is called the Ability One program. The Ability One program employs individuals who are blind or severely disabled. That program is run by two nonprofits that have a nationwide reach: NISH, which works with the severely disabled, and NIB, National Institutes for the Blind, which works with the blind.
They have their own NISH.
I'm sorry?
They have their own NISH.
They do indeed, Your Honor, yes. NISH and NIB, in turn, work with hundreds of local nonprofits around the United States, most of them small, community-based nonprofits that help fund direct employment for blind and severely disabled individuals. So, no, the contract that they were working with Veterans Affairs to administer would be a long-term follow-on contract, not a short-term contract, which is the contract that the Court of Federal Claims used to establish standing. Therefore,
are these then, I mean, what happens through the Ability One procurement and also through alternatively through the veterans, so these all then become non-compete contracts?
If procurement is placed on, or if goods or services are placed on the Ability One procurement list, those goods or services can only be provided by a JWAD nonprofit, either NISH or NIB. If they are not placed on the list, then the agency can look at other procurement avenues. They can look at small businesses, they can look at veteran-owned businesses, they can look at 8As. NISH procurements have, by law, the highest priority for services, though. So if any item is on the Ability One list, it then must be purchased from the provider that provides those services through the Ability One program.
So, who makes the determination as to whether a contract for goods or services is on the Ability One list?
By statute, Your Honor, that decision rests exclusively with the committee.
But it seems like there's input from agencies. That's what I was a little unclear about from the record here.
Absolutely, Your Honor. By law, it's solely the responsibility of the committee. In reality, the committee wants to and needs to work closely with agencies in order to ascertain the agency's needs. Wants to understand what the agency needs in order to make sure that it can provide them. This is not a confrontational process. The committee wants to work hand in glove with agencies to do this.
How does it work as a practical matter? I mean, does an agency go to the committee and say, we have these contracts that we're going to let, we think they are appropriate for the Ability One program, or does the committee go to the agency?
It could work either way, Your Honor. In this particular instance, the committee found out about the agency's need through a sources sought notification that the contracting officer had placed in the Federal Register. The committee then contacted the agency to let the agency know of its ability to perform these services and essentially to talk to the agency about the ability.
So the contracting officer, leaving aside what it's contended she did improperly, the contracting officer announces a need for these laundry services.
Yes, right?
And the committee sees that announcement, and it then in turn goes to the agency. Is that what happened here?
That's what happened here, yes, Your Honor. It could also happen in reverse. It could be that the agency that the committee does outreach to agencies. For example, if they could go to the Department of Veterans Affairs or other agencies and say...
Now, let me ask you, the time is limited.
Certainly.
If a contract is placed, or procurement is placed on the Ability One list, okay, then does NISH go and find someone who qualifies under the program, and then that person enters into a contract with the agency, or is it NISH that enters into the contract?
I believe NISH works with hundreds of nonprofits around the United States.
Okay.
They would want to make sure they had a nonprofit in the area where the services need to be performed in order to enter into the contract. They would want an actual entity to perform. I don't know if the contract is actually between the smaller nonprofit that actually performs the work. I believe it is between them and the agency, but I'm not 100% certain on that. It's either between them and the agency or between NISH and the agency.
What about your point on remedy?
Yes, Your Honor. The Court of Federal Claims did not have jurisdiction to award Angelica the relief that it did. Congress has statutorily established method for adding items and deleting them from the Ability One procurement list. This is set out in 41 U.S.C. section 47A2, and it says that all additions are to be done in accordance with 5 U.S.C. section 553. And I should point out to the court, it's my understanding in the last few days that this section has been recodified. I understand, I've tried checking on Westlaw and I've not been able to track it down, but I understand that this section is now 41 U.S.C. section 8501. Just to bring that to the attention of the court.
But it's not been changed.
It is not. No, I'm just, Your Honor, just recodified. Again, these are, by law, these additions and deletions are done in accordance with Section 553. This has been construed to mean that challenges to them are also to be done in accordance with the Administrative Procedures Act. The Administrative Procedures Act has its own section for review. It has been construed by a number of courts. This is the proper method of challenging them. Now, when there's precedent in this court that holds
so
that.
Let me ask you, on this point, assume for the moment the Court of Federal Claims, instead of directing the committee to rescind or delist, assume for the moment the Court of Federal Claims had said instead to the agency, you have to go back and go through the correct process to determine whether this is going to be under the Veterans Program or the Ability One Program. And the court had not said anything about delisting the services with the committee. Would that have been relief within the jurisdiction of the Court of Federal Claims?
Quite possibly, Your Honor. The problem there is that by statute, the Ability One procurement list is a mandatory source of supply. If the item is on the list, the agency does not have discretion as to where they obtain it. They must, by law, obtain it from the provider that is on the list. So if they did, Angelica would probably not see that as a complete remedy. But there is precedent in this court that is very clear that when Congress prescribes a remedy in detail, it is presumed to be exclusive. Here, that is precisely what Congress did. Congress set out a method in the JWAD Act for challenging additions to the list. Angelica could have, but did not, avail itself to this method. They could have filed an action pursuant to the APA in district court and challenged this listing. They did not. The court was quite simply incorrect, assuming that it also had jurisdiction.
Would you have made an argument with respect to standing if they had gone into federal district court to argue the APA?
I don't believe it would have, Your Honor. This has been litigated in a number of district courts around the country. We have several cases that we cited in our briefing. I'm in my rebuttal time. I'll simply say also that there's two other factors. This is not an instance of repeal by implication, which the Court of Federal Claims said in its opinion, and also the issue of prior enactment. This court has held that a statute dealing with a narrow issue is not subsumed by a later, more generalized, broader statute. This is my rebuttal time. I will reserve the balance of time.
We will save it for you.
Thank you.
Mr. Block.
Thank you, Your Honors. I would like to first address the issue of standing. I want to be very clear on the timing here. There was an initial 5-year contract, then there was a follow-on 6-month extension. The contracts that are at issue are the interim contracts thereafter that fill a gap between the end of the extension and when a new contract would be entered into with a new entity. As for those contracts, which were in fact awarded to Angelica after the protest was filed, and after the decision came out, That's what gives Angelica standing, because as the incumbent contractor, they were uniquely positioned to bid on those contracts, and in fact did so and won those contracts. And the court below properly found that we had demonstrated that we would lose a contract but for the rescinding of the listing on the Ability One program.
But you don't meet the criteria, do you?
Yes, we do. We do because there's nothing in the statute that says what the contract is. Okay? When the statute says, and the case law says, the contract, and Judge Leto down below found that we were entitled to, had but for the VA's improper action, there would have been a longer period of time to fulfill their requirements to determine whether or not there was a SDVOSB or a VOSB eligible to perform. During that time period, Angelica was positioned to, was a potential bidder, in fact did bid, and did win interim contracts. So that is what affords us standing to complain about the VA's improper action.
Do you have standing a question?
Thank you. So we agree here, the Court of Federal Claims said for purposes of the standing analysis, the contract is that we look at is the interim contracts,
yes,
rather than the new procurement for follow-on laundry services, correct?
They found that was sufficient to
now, if one disagrees with that, if the court were to determine that the appropriate contract to look for is the procurement for the laundry services in the Southeast region, does that mean you lose on standing?
It's interesting because you look at it and you say, okay, Angelica's a large business, it's not a veteran-owned small business, and therefore they couldn't possibly get this contract after they adhered to the requirements. But in reality, Angelica actually won that contract. And so in theory, I guess I would agree that we were not eligible, but what they did was they put out a cascading RFP with different requirements. At the end of the day,
so the bottom line is,
Angelica,
if one determines that that is the relevant procurement rather than the interim contracts, Angelica loses on standing because there hasn't been any challenge to having that contract be limited to either the Ability One program or the Veterans program, and it's never been argued that Angelica qualifies under that.
It's true. I'm only having difficulty answering you because in reality, Angelica won that contract.
Case.
That's right. And in terms of what happened thereafter, Angelica won the follow-on contract. Now, I would agree that we would not have qualified to win based on our being a service-disabled veteran-owned small business or a veteran-owned small business. Yes.
Now the contractor?
Yes.
You mean this didn't go the Ability One route or the Veterans route?
Correct.
Well, then why are we here?
I don't know.
What are we arguing about?
I don't know why we're arguing.
Just to be clear, what are you still in the interim and the follow-on because of this litigation?
No.
So the actual contract that was the subject of the dispute here,
yes,
between the list or whatever, that has now been awarded to Angelica?
Yes.
And what's the duration of this contract?
5 years.
Does the word moot come to mind?
It came to my mind.
Well, whether or not it's been, I mean, so what is the, so you think that answers the standing question?
Well,
Does that prove that what was at issue here, the contracted issue here is?
Judge asked me a specific question. I was having difficulty answering a specific question given
the
facts of this case.
No, I understand why you were.
So, what the court decided below I also think was proper, so let me focus on that, okay, which is that if Angelica lost an opportunity to bid on a contract award of any duration,
so assume for a moment that we disagree,
yes,
with that conclusion.
Yes.
We think it has to only go to a direct economic impact, has to be related to the ultimate contract that's in dispute. Now, if you're saying that the contract that was in dispute in this particular case is now been awarded to you all.
Yes.
What happened to the other groups? Are they challenging it? Is there some protest?
No, Your Honor. I can understand why that is very confusing.
Well, so what happens to, so there's an order out standing by the Court of Federal Claims, I guess. Is that mooted too, in your view, now that the contract's been awarded? I mean, the order that the government is challenging.
I would say that circumstances have mooted the order, yes.
Could you explain to us how the contract went from being one that was supposed to be awarded to this group, whatever, to a general contract in which you competed?
I'll do my best. There was a cascading order of preference RFP that was issued. There was a competitive process that ensued. As a result of that, when I say cascading order of preference, I'll be more specific. SDVOSB, VOSB.
Is this all stuff that happened after this case?
Yes.
Okay, so after Court of Claims, there's a new contract.
Oh? Yes.
Should one of the parties have sent us a letter informing us of this?
Your Honor, with all due respect, I didn't particularly want to have oral argument on this matter today, but I'm here.
Well, that doesn't answer
the question. I guess the answer to your question is yes, of course, that would have been helpful. And for my part, I apologize for not doing so.
Well, when you're through, we'll hear what the government has to say.
Yes. Any more questions on standing? Move on to jurisdiction. Okay. Now, the agency does not challenge the jurisdiction of the Court of Federal Claims to hear a bid protest concerning the committee. That's on page 6 of their reply brief. And when you consider that in conjunction with what this court has said most recently in the Turner Construction case, that's 645 F3rd 1377 at 1388, that was issued in July of this year, you quote the Tucker Act, which explicitly empowers the court to award any relief that the court considers proper, including declaratory injunctive relief. And the important part here is, thus, once jurisdiction attaches, the Court of Federal Claims has broad, equitable powers to fashion an appropriate remedy. We give deference to the Court of Federal Claims' decision to grant or deny injunctive relief, only disturbing its decision if it abused its discretion. In this case, there's been no challenge whatsoever to give.
What's the size of that case again?
Yes, 645 F3rd 1377, and the specific page number is 1388. That was issued on July 14th, 2011.
Let me ask you to follow up, if I could, the discussion I was having with Mr. Full. The committee makes the ultimate decision as to whether something's going to be on the Ability One list, correct?
Correct.
What exactly, and here it's, well, the government conceded that the agency, the contracting officer, didn't go through the procedures required under the Veterans Program. What is the precise role, in your view, of the agency vis-a-vis the committee in this situation? It's still a little unclear to me, because it seems that the committee makes the decision, but somehow the agency is a necessary player in the decision process.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you asked me that question. The agency, as it did in this case, makes a determination about whether these types of services fit into what is otherwise already on the Ability One list. For example, janitorial services are a big one. Other types of lawn maintenance, things of that nature, have been found to fall in. And there's a category. There's a spreadsheet that you can find on the JWAD website. So the agency has to determine that this is a proper type of service to be included on the Ability One list. So that's their role. They make the official initial determination. And I heard what Mr. Falk said, which is that the committee can do outreach activity. I'm not aware of such outreach activity. I'm aware of an agency and going through the process and determining it has enough time, and this is the important part here, has enough time to get it listed on the Ability One procurement list before the procurement is issued. That takes at least 6 months, according to the information found down below. So if it's not on the list by the time that RFP is awarded, time solicitation awarded, you can't get it from the Ability One list. You have to wait. If it's a 5-year contract, you have to wait another 5 years to get it listed on the Ability One list for that particular service. So it's a decision of one, this is the type of service that should be on the Ability One list, and two, there's the timing, sufficient timing to allow that to be placed, to allow the contracting officer to procure it through the Ability One list.
What about Mr. Folk's argument that the specific governs over the general?
Right.
That there is in the JWAD Act specific procedures.
There's absolutely nothing exclusive in the JWAD Act that deals with this type of situation. It is a rulemaking entity. It does not have adjudicative power. There's no judicial review process in the JWAD Act. They have no jurisdiction to decide whether or not the VA acted properly or improperly. Its jurisdiction is the fallback APA jurisdiction that comes in when there's no specific judicial procedure written into the Act. There's nothing that in there that precludes jurisdiction from another court. And taking it the other way, there's nothing in the Tucker Act as amended that precludes the Court of Federal Claims from addressing these types of issues. And given that it was addressed and enacted later, Congress, if it so intended, could have specifically excluded such jurisdiction. It chose not to. And as Judge Leto said below, there are different spheres of influence. As long as you stay in each, it's perfectly okay. And that would be the position I would take. And the cases that were cited by the VA, all of which say this is the exclusive remedy, this is the exclusive way to address this specific issue. And that's just not the case here.
Spock, let me just ask you one question. Get back to that for this issue we're discussing, or we'll discuss it, Mr. Folk. The Court of Federal Claims decision is in August of 2010? I'm just looking at this. I'm sorry, October 26th of 2010. And when did Angelica receive the new laundry services contract?
I don't know the exact date, but in 2011.
2011. So
yes.
It was after this?
Yes.
Was it before the briefing in this case? Because the government's briefs were filed April 6th of 2011, then your brief on June 13th, your response brief, and then the government's reply on July 13th. When was the, in terms of those dates?
I'm guessing a little. It may have been during. I don't recall specifically. I can certainly find that out and get back with the specific date.
Anything further, Mr. Block?
No, Your Honor. I'll see the rest of my time.
Thank you. We'll hear some rebuttals. And Mr. Polk, who will surely tell us why the government is complaining about the standing of Angelica when they've already received the contract.
Several things, Your Honor. Excuse me. First of all, as far as the award date of the contract, I believe that was in October of this year, so it's been relatively recently. I've been trying to track it down. I wanted to be able to tell the court what happened there. After the interim contracts were awarded, the agency was still operating under Judge Leto's injunction. They decided that there was not enough time to comply with the Veterans Benefits Act and also to work with NISH to again get this listing placed, these services placed back on the list. They said there simply wasn't enough time to do that. That is why they went with a long-term contract to Angelica. there are several things I wanted to address that opposing counsel mentioned. There's something that Congress has not established a specific procedure for review. Congress has established...
Before we get off this standing, this mootness standing question, so in the government's view, this case is still a live controversy?
Your Honor, there's several things here. First of all, there's a doctrine that courts can reach decisions on something that is subject to review yet evading decision. That's the situation we're dealing with here. Bid protests, by their nature, occur because agencies have a pressing need for a good or a service. It's very difficult for one of those to be appealed. We have an opinion here that really makes a huge impact on a lot of small nonprofits around the country that really don't have the resources that really can be damaged severely by such a ruling.
In theory. Not by this ruling. This ruling only applies to this case, and this case is now moot. So what impact is it going to have?
It could have a critical impact. The ruling could have a large impact down the road. Right now, it's conceded that entities can challenge placing on the procurement list through the Administrative Procedures Act.
Yeah, okay, but let me stop you just with this. I'm not clear. So the government's answer is because it felt so compelled to have our court address the propriety of what the Court of Federal Claims did here with respect to its authority?
That was the case when we filed the appeal, Your Honor, yes.
All right. The thing that doesn't make sense to me then is the government's threshold argument with respect to this case, as I understood it, was standing. In other words, as I understood your position, you shouldn't even go to the merits of this case, court, because there's not even any standing to bring it, which would mean the government was pressing us not to necessarily, if at all, decide this issue, which you're now saying is the be-all and end-all for why we need to be here today, because you need an answer to this question. Am I missing something? I obviously must be missing something here.
Your Honor, when we filed the case, when we filed the appeal, I should say, in December of last year, we did not know what the future would bring as far as this procurement went. We brought forth all the arguments that we thought were relevant.
I know, but there's something called additional authority or notifying the court of interim acts which could or might affect what's before us. So I'm not quibbling about what you said a year and a half ago when you didn't know this was happening. I guess I'm wondering what what your position is, not why you continue to press this after arising events.
Your Honor, admittedly, we probably should notify the court of this sometime after October, a couple of months ago, when we found out that Angelica did receive the follow-on contract. Again, we're talking a month or so ago.
But you understand my question. Your argument to us seemed to be, well, this is a pressing issue because this court needs to review what the Court of Federal Claims said about the authority to the bill. And am I not correct that the government's position here before us was don't address that, just let this case go off on standing? So I guess I'm not buying your answer to why we're actually here.
Your Honor, these are arguments in the alternative. We would like to see the court address the merits here.
You said in your brief, Mr. Polk, that standing is the end of it.
We believe there are two reasons why Angelica should have lost.
But why do we decide the standing issue? Why is there any case to decide here?
Again, Your Honor, it goes.
What's the point at this point?
Again, Your Honor, it goes to the fact that if the opinion of the Court of Federal Claims stands, it causes a great deal of problem to a lot of small entities that are capable of accommodating that.
You want us to say there's no standing here?
We would like to receive.
No, you don't want us to say there's no standing. You want us to say there's no standing. No.
We would like for you to go to the merits. If you there's also standing arguments.
What you're saying in your brief.
we very much would like
Isn't
this court to
Isn't that different from what you're saying in your brief?
In our brief, yes, it is, Your Honor. It could be seen that way.
Wait a minute. In the brief you said, I just want to make sure you understand, in the brief you said, no standing so you don't get to the merits. Now you're saying you want us to find standing so we can get to the merits.
We believe that there is no standing. We also would like the court to get to the merits regardless.
But how can
we also understand the court may not agree with us on standing.
Standing is, our cases say that standing is the preliminary question.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so, do you want us to say there's no standing here?
In the alternative, yes. We would like
But that's a preliminary question. Our cases say we have to we do that first, and that's what you asked us in the briefs to do. Are you saying do you want us to find standing or no standing?
We'd like to find no standing.
That's the end of the case then.
Assuming the court finds that. If the court does not find that, then it's not the end of the case, and there's an issue out here, a great deal of potential harm to a lot of small entities out there. That's if the court finds standing.
You started by explaining this by saying there's this theoretical potential harm that's sort of like the case that evades review because it's never capable of deciding it, right? Which is an argument obviously you never made to us because we never knew the facts that would have been the predicate for making that argument because you never told us, right?
Your Honor, those facts did not establish themselves until about 2 months ago. We did not know the facts at the time we filed our briefs, no. We did not know how the award would turn. But again, if the court's decision below is allowed to stand, it could allow parties essentially two bites at the apple. A party that was dissatisfied with a JWAD listing decision could in turn file an action in district court pursuant to the APA, you pursue that action, and then if they're dissatisfied with that, they potentially file a bid protest with the Court of Federal Claims to further elongate the time that it takes to perform a listing decision.
Mr. Folk, you've greatly exceeded your time because of the questions, so we'll terminate the argument and for future reference, the APA is the Administrative Procedure Act.
Understood, Your Honor.
We'll take the case under advisement.
Thank you, Your Honor.